Hello and welcome into this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you had a great weekend and that Monday is looking good for you and yours. We had a crazy weekend around our place. More on that in a few minutes. But I hope you're doing well. I hope that you were able to unplug a bit, spend some quality time with loved ones, and I think sometimes even more important than that, alone in the quiet over the weekend, because that helps you to regroup. So much noise in our lives today. So much noise. And I include this podcast in that. This podcast can be noise. If you're using it just to occupy your time, to shut out the quiet because the quiet bugs you, maybe you should turn it off for a little while. Come back and listen, please. But you need to be aware that being in the quiet is important. I talk about this every now and then, but I think being in the quiet makes you face some things. And I think facing things is why we fill so much of our lives with noise. Because we're uncomfortable. Sometimes we lack the courage, but we should face things, because if we don't, we'll never be able to see life honestly and truthfully. So make it a point sometimes, from time to time, spend a little time in the quiet and deal with things. It is the Monday edition of the podcast. It's the 18th day of May 2020, and around our place over the weekend, life was, it got interesting. Saturday morning, life pretty much resumed normality. We, you know, it's been, oh God, it's been a while. It has been a while since I've been able to get out and connect with my buddy Mike and go have breakfast and scavenge thrift stores. And we did that Saturday morning. Now, hours at thrift stores have been adjusted a bit in our area. Normally, we're able to get in 7:30-ish to the first one, 8 o'clock the next one opens, and so forth. And this, and now they're opening like 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock in the morning. And so we had to reschedule things. Breakfast occurred a bit later, but we did have breakfast. We went to a fast food place that that we enjoy going to from time to time. We have two or three places that we rotate between. And this particular place has become a recent favorite. And we knew that social distancing requirements were going to make things a little different. But it was still kind of interesting to watch. We park, walk in, and go to place an order, order for breakfast at the counter. And there are six employees working. Primarily it's drive-through traffic, people coming by and getting breakfast biscuits and things like that. And a handful of people, us among them, inside. I think there were maybe three other tables or booths occupied inside while we were there. They had every other booth and every other table. They had removed some tables, spread things out, and the booths, every other booth was taped off so you couldn't get into it. And they had signs, please stay, you know, stay apart, that sort of a thing. And they had big stickers on the floor for where you should stand to stay 6 feet away from whoever else was in line. And behind the counter, six employees working, some working the drive-through, some working the kitchen, some working the counter, and all of them wearing face masks and gloves, including Mr. Manager Guy, who's you can spot Mr. Manager Guy. He's the one wearing the tie. And they're all wearing masks. And then I noticed, wait a minute, Mr. Manager Guy's got the little mask slippage going on. You know what I'm talking about. He's not wearing it over his nose. He's got his mouth covered, but it's not over his nose. And then I notice all but one of the employees has their mask like that. All but one. There's only one who has her mask pulled up over her nose, and she's the one who's going out and wiping the tables down, cleaning the booths and tables between guests. And I thought, well, if you're going to wear the mask, if you're going to play along with the purveyors of the panic, at least do it right. That's the way I have to look at it. If you're going to do it right. And then later, as we were getting ready to leave, I decided, I think I want to get a refill on the coffee. And the way that works is they don't refill your coffee. You throw your cup away. You walk up and say, hey, can I get a refill? And they say, sure, throw that cup away. I'll give you another one. And they just give you another one with their little gloved hand. And you have to ask for whatever you want in it. If you want creamer or sweetener or anything like that, it's not out in the little bins out on the counter anymore where you would normally pick it up. And they don't have the coffee pumps out there for you to refill with. You have to actually request because, oh, heaven forbid, we all touch the same thing. So you go to the counter and you ask for your stuff. So I go to the counter and there's two people in front of me and there's one guy. Oh, this guy. I forgot about this guy. There's this one guy who comes up while I'm standing there and cuts in front of everybody else holding his biscuit that he's ordered, and he's been given the wrong thing. So they've given him something he didn't order, and he wants them to fix it. And, of course, the girl who's working the register is talking to a customer already. He walks up and interrupts, and she just kind of like, okay, hold on. And she's trying to finish taking a customer's order and making sure she's getting everything right with this guy interfering and interrupting. And another girl, the girl that goes out and wipes the tables down, she's kind of come around the end of the counter and walks past the guy, and he turns to her and he says, yeah, she says, okay, I'll get it in just a second, because she's on her way to get something done. She has, because of the health regulations, she has to go wipe this table down that has just emptied. She has to go clear the trash and wipe the table down because that's the new normal. She has to go do that and make sure everything is sanitized before anybody sits down, lest somebody get sick and sue them. So she says, okay, hold on. I've got it. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. And she goes and wipes the table down. She comes back and the guy confronts her. Said, listen, I said, this is wrong. She said, oh, I'm going to go take care of that right now. And that's the only time he calmed down. Now, Mr. Wrong Biscuit Guy apparently believes it's the 1880s. And he lives on the plains because he's missing the cowboy hat, but he's pretty much got a lot of the other stuff happening. And he's got the holster with the big revolver in it hanging out in the open, because this state is an open carry state. You can't open carry here. So it's still, even though you see it, it's still kind of unusual to see. Now, you see it on cops, and they've usually got their badges clipped into their belts right next to their sidearms and things like that. So you go, oh, it's a cop. No big deal. But still, when you see somebody open carrying, it's an attention getter, which, as I have said here before, is my main issue with open carry. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not against open carry. I just think that the kind of brain that would murder innocent people in a public place will notice you're open carrying and take you out first. That's just how I see things. So that's this guy. But as all of this is playing out, I see how slowly things are going. There's one person working the counter. There's two people in front of me in line, and there's Mr. Wrong Biscuit Guy. And I realize I'm not getting another cup of coffee. It's just not happening. And so I walked by the trash can, disposed of my empty cup, and we left. It just wasn't happening. Everything was all out of sorts. And I don't know if you've seen this kind of thing over the weekend, but we saw it a couple of times over the weekend. I saw it with Mike and then with my wife Jane. We were out last evening. And more about that, I'll tell you about that. But towards the end of the day Saturday, this is after other things have been done. We've gotten out and done a couple of things, get home. My wife's working on things. She says, you know, I a couple of times this week I've had to throw things out in that were in the fridge because they've got mold on them. And she had mentioned something about throwing cheese out before. She came to me and said, these slices of cheese, the top one's got mold on it. That's unusual. And I thought, it's not good. And then there's more things. And Saturday, she said, I don't think the refrigerator is working right. And so we decided, I checked it, and sure enough, I reached in and grabbed a couple of things, like a bottle of water. It's not cold. It's cool, but it's not cold. And I'm feeling around other things, and they're not as they should be. And Jane had gone, and she'd gotten groceries, and loaded the fridge up with the stuff that has to be cold and frozen. I reached up into the freezer, up on top of the fridge, into the freezer, and the stuff that had been there for hours was chilly, but it wasn't frozen. Now, stuff that had been frozen before hadn't thawed yet, but nothing new was freezing. And I said, oh, great. This is not good. And so we decided that what we would do would be to see how things were in the morning. Give it overnight to see if perhaps, I don't know, the refrigerator door had been left open too long, filling it up after shopping for groceries or whatever. We gave it overnight. And the next morning we got up and she announces, still no freezing. Everything's wrong. And we decided this refrigerator is old. It's 20 something, 20 plus probably. It's a great refrigerator. It's a Gen Air. It's been a great refrigerator, but they don't last forever. And so we made the decision to do some shopping. I did some shopping online before we left the house, looked around, got a decent idea, made a mental note, grabbed the measuring tape, measure the opening, and then we'll go. So we take off and go refrigerator shopping. And I realize before we got to the first place that I never measured the opening, so I had no idea what refrigerator was going to fit. And so we looked at refrigerators and looked and the whole time thinking, I like this, I like that, but I don't know if it'll fit, you know, that sort of a thing. And I decided at some point I'm going to pick up a dorm fridge, one of these little fridges, so we can toss some necessary items into that and keep some things cool in the meantime until things get sorted out one way or another. And we took everything else over to our niece's, and she has a freezer and she has an extra fridge and the like. So we were able to store things at her house, which is just 5 minutes away from us. And so we're not losing all of those groceries. So that's good. And while we're out, we were at a Home Depot and saw a van that I recognized, and I realized, oh, that guy lives down the hill from us. He's an appliance repair guy. And so we noted his number, and when we got back to the house, we gave him a call, and we were everywhere. We went to Home Depot. We went to Lowe's. We couldn't go to Best Buy because you can't get in a Best Buy right now. And we also went to the Sears Outlet Center on the far side of town, and took a look there and fell in love with this a KitchenAid refrigerator. And we talked ourselves out of it because it was so expensive, and it had a little bit of damage, kind of a scratch and dent thing, just a little. And we talked ourselves out of it because it was just ridiculous. And also we didn't know if it would fit in the space. So we get home, call the guy. He tells us, well, considering how old it is and you can't really get parts for those things anymore, you know, it's going to cost you $300 to $500 to fix this thing, just to get the Freon reloaded, to find the leak, to patch the leak, to fix it all up. It's going to run you anywhere from $300 to $500. And so we said, then let's measure that space and shop some more. And that's what we did. And we picked one out. And finally, late yesterday, we had made a decision, and we had come to a conclusion on which refrigerator we were going to get. We picked it out, and we paid for it, and it comes a week from tomorrow. A week from tomorrow. This is how long we have to wait. I thought, honestly, it would be a bit longer than that, but still, it's a week from, well, actually, it's a week from Wednesday, not a week from tomorrow, because I wasn't able to do it on a Tuesday. I'm booked on Tuesday, that Tuesday, then I couldn't be around to make sure it got delivered and set up properly. There would be nobody here. So, After that, we went to dinner. A place has got a big banner out front. Dining room open. Place we've been a handful of times. We went in that place. There were three other tables besides ours occupied. It was empty. It was spooky. It was strange. They had cleared a lot of tables out of the dining area. It was just odd. Very odd. But the food was great. In fact, lunch today, leftovers from last night. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast, Monday, 18th day of May, 2020. By the way, the guy, the repair guy we called, he was a wealth of information. We learned one of the refrigerator that we had picked out that was our favorite on our first foray into the shopping adventure was a Samsung. It was gorgeous. It was the finish we wanted. It was exactly, it had everything we wanted. And it was on sale. It was marked down over $1,000. And I thought, wow, that's great. And the measuring thing caught up with it too, because it was a little too big for our space. But we learned that Samsung has this gigantic class action lawsuit. They're being sued by people because their ice makers fail. And they've had enough unhappy customers whose ice makers have failed and Samsung hasn't remedied the situation properly that now there's this big class action lawsuit about their ice makers. So we dodged that bullet because of the information from the guy. And we'd also looked at a couple of LGs and thought, well, I like their TVs. Their TVs are really great, but what about these refrigerators? And he said, also avoid LG. Well, that's great. Because they have a class action lawsuit because their compressors have been failing. So, we got a whirlpool. It is the Monday edition of the podcast. It's great to have you along. Thank you so much. I'm glad you're here. Hopefully your weekend was a good weekend and you are persevering on another Monday. Well, some people around America have been trying to persevere, getting back to their regular lives and finding life a bit more difficult under what progressives would have us accept as a new normal. Here's an example. A tourist from New York has been arrested in Hawaii. His crime? He allegedly violated state regulations that require travelers to quarantine for 14 days upon arrival. We've discussed this scenario before. You've saved up, you've planned, you've made your reservations, you've bought your plane tickets, you're going to Hawaii. You get there and you check into the hotel and they tell you at the desk, since you're not from Hawaii, you have to quarantine inside the hotel for 14 days. Well, that kind of blows the whole purpose of going to Hawaii. You could go to the local Holiday Inn Express and hang out for 14 days with pretty much the same results, and it would have cost you a heck of a lot less. Well, 23-year-old Tariq Peters from the Bronx arrived in Honolulu last Monday. He then posted photographs on Instagram showing himself sunbathing at the beach and carrying a surfboard. That's what the state officials tell us. Quote, he allegedly left his hotel room the day he arrived and traveled many places using public transportation. Authorities became aware of his social media posts from citizens who saw posts of him on the beach with a surfboard, sunbathing, and walking around Waikiki at night. So says a news release from the Hawaii COVID-19 Joint Information Center. Maybe that should be the Joint Informers Center. They continue, this morning, agents were able to confirm with the hotel personnel that had seen Peters leave his room and the premises on numerous occasions during the week. Hawaii authorities have instituted strict quarantine regulations for tourists, even though the state has only 638 confirmed coronavirus cases and 17 deaths as of last Friday. The Associated Press reports that agents from the state attorney general's office arrested him Friday morning, and hotel staff told the agents they saw Peters leave his room and the hotel numerous times.
Wow.
Travelers in quarantine aren't allowed to leave their hotel rooms or the residences for any reason, except medical emergencies. Hotel guests don't receive housekeeping services. They have to arrange for their own food to be delivered to their rooms. Peters was booked, by the way. His bail was set at $4,000. A photo from 2 days before with the location Honolulu, Waikiki Beach, shows him carrying a surfboard on a beach. A photo from May 4th shows him wearing a mask in New York's Bryant Park. He was charged with, we heard this before, with another case, remember? Charged with unsworn falsification to authority. Hawaii now requires tourists to list their contact and lodging information, and all visitors must sign an agreement that they will spend the next 14 days in self-quarantine. By signing the legal document, they acknowledge they understand violating the order is a criminal offense, and they are subject to a $5,000 fine and or a year imprisonment. The state's mandatory quarantine runs through the end of June. That's according to Governor David Ige. Hawaii Attorney General Claire Connors said, "We appreciate the assistance of local people who spot flagrant violations of our emergency rules on various social media sites and report them to the appropriate authorities." So the government in Hawaii is using snitches, social media snitches, to report on people who are spending their hard-earned money in their state. A state which lives off of tourism, by the way. They're snitching on people coming and actually providing a life wire of cash, a lifeline of cash to their economy. They're snitching on them, reporting them, and fining them for coming to this travel destination they've dreamed of visiting for so long. This is absurd, but this is the progressive new normal. It's sickening. You want to hear something even more sickening and absurd? Okay. Lindsey Graham, not to be confused with the one who's in Washington, D.C., Lindsey Graham is the owner of Glamour Salon in Salem, Oregon. Ms. Graham has been harassed by numerous government agencies. Why? She reopened her salon despite Governor Kate Brown's stay-at-home order. Kate Brown, by the way, is a Democrat. By the way, if a state is closed, the governor's a Democrat. During a Friday press conference, Ms. Graham said multiple government agencies, including Child Protective Services, the CPS, have investigated her for wanting to reopen her salon and make a living. She says, "And if you can possibly believe this, on May 7th, Child Protective Services showed up at my home," she says, taking a deep breath, holding back tears. "They questioned my husband and I. They questioned my child without me present. They searched our home. And I've never expected such a violent, aggressive, vindictive thing could ever have been done to me or my family because I'm trying to earn a living, because I'm trying to work." According to her, the CPS case is still open, as far as she knows. She said, "They're still insisting that they want to talk to my 3-year-old daughter. So I don't know if they're going to try to talk to my 8-week-old unborn. We'll see. Or newborn, I should say. We'll see. But they did check his diaper." She said the concerns the CPS listed were completely random, unmerited, unwarranted, and unprovable. She says, "So it was a completely false claim. And if they don't pursue a false claim, and there are actually children out there that are being abused by their families, then they're wasting their time investigating me because Kate Brown doesn't like me. That's pretty devastating. This is a false claim that wasted CPS's valuable time when there are children who really are in need." Well, not only did CPS come after Graham's family, but Oregon's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, slapped her with a $14,000 fine. The state's licensing board also threatened to pull the licenses of every single stylist at the salon, which would prevent them from working at other salons throughout the state. The owner says there are 23 stylists in her salon, all independent contractors, not her employees. As of now, three stylists have decided to return to work. Although Graham can't give an exact number, she estimates each stylist is seeing 3 to 4 clients per day. She says she plans to stay open as long as she can manage it. She says, I'm bound to stay open as long as I can until the government basically tries to take my entire career, something I've worked 15 years for, out from under me. That's the most harmful thing they could have done, and I think that's why they did it. I've worked my whole life to build the businesses that I've built, and they want to take away my entire right to do that. She says she feels persecuted by Kate Brown herself because she's governing these agencies. She's allowing them to target her, and if not, requesting them to target her, because every agency she has underneath her has come at her. The governor has the ability to make the entire saga go away by allowing businesses to reopen and giving citizens the ability to take care of themselves. But you know she won't do that. It's ridiculous that this woman's being persecuted. 20 minutes up the road, people can go get their haircuts. But her stylists aren't allowed to work because the governor hasn't given the green light. And that is yet another tiny tyrant trying to institute a new normal for Americans. And an American who's suffering because she's resisting. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. For the next little while, we're going to talk about something different besides coronavirus. The House of Representatives last week passed a coronavirus relief bill. The most expensive bill in history, by the way. $3 trillion. That's trillion with a T. And as I saw someone explain it over the weekend, we just did, what was it, a $4 trillion bill? It lasted how long? A month, maybe? It was gone in a month, just over a month. So this one will last three weeks, maybe a month. So how far do you go? How much more money, which doesn't exist, can you spend? And it's just a crazy thing. But there's a flip side to this coin, and we're going to get to that flip side either in this segment or the next. But I want you to hear both sides of this, okay? The House of Representatives Friday evening passed a $3 trillion coronavirus relief bill, the most expensive legislation approved by that body in history. The Democrats hailed as the unprecedented response needed to deal with the pandemic and its economic fallout. The record-breaking bill narrowly passed by a 208 to 199 vote. 14 Democrats defied their party and voted no, while one Republican, Representative Pete King of New York, broke with the GOP and voted yes. And do you know why he did? Because Pete King knows that his district is rabidly, rabidly leftist, that they are very liberal. And in order to get reelected, he has to vote the way they want. I realize that representatives should represent their districts, the interest of their districts, the people in their districts. But he's a Republican, and he should know better. So he is playing games. He should just change parties. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, I'm thrilled. I'm so proud of my members. They just did something so monumental for the American people, for their health, for their lives, for their livelihood, and for our democracy. We couldn't be more thrilled. Unlike the first four coronavirus bills, which were passed with overwhelming bipartisan support, this 1,815-page package was drafted by Democrats alone and earned a veto threat from the White House and condemnation from the GOP as a liberal wish list that's dead on arrival in the Senate. I want you to remember that the more than one person has said, oh yeah, this is dead. It's never going anywhere. It's dead on arrival in the Senate. This is the Republican position on this particular bill. I don't have a problem with that, but I just want you to remember that is the position. because we're coming back to that. Even Pelosi couldn't get all her members on board. The most liberal members of the party panned the legislation as not going big enough, while moderate members in swing districts said they couldn't support a bill that was too partisan and costly. Representative Joe Cunningham, a Democrat, South Carolina, said, "At a time when our country is in real trouble, we should not be spending precious time on one-sided solutions that aren't going anywhere." The 14 Democrats voting no were Cunningham Cindy Axne of Iowa, Sharice Davids of Kansas, Abby Finkenauer of Iowa, Jared Goldman of Maine, Kendra Horn of Oklahoma. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Most Democrats, some making emotional pleas on the House floor, said Americans need this lifeline now. Now, they spoke of the more than 85,000 deaths from COVID-19, winding lines at food banks and in their districts, more than 36 million filing for unemployment, and families struggling to make rent as evidence of the need for a historic response. And let me just say here, the reason all of those things are happening is because all of these people voted and said, we need to lock this country down. That's why all of this stuff is happening. All of it. Not necessarily because there is actually a virus issue, but because people in government felt they were smarter than the average guy. Representative John Garamendi, the Democrat from California, told members on the House floor, "Many say this bill is dead on arrival. If we don't move this bill, the deaths will be in our districts." Wow, fearmonger much, sir? Dubbed as the HEROES Act, the legislation includes 915, there's no decimal there, $915 billion in the state and local aid that could prevent layoffs of public workers. Public workers, not private sector workers. Government workers, like first responders and teachers. A new $200 billion HEROES fund for hazard pay for essential workers, $100 billion for K-12 and higher education, $75 billion for coronavirus testing. Wouldn't you think that these numbers would be reversed if the coronavirus was the central focus of the bill? Wouldn't the $915 billion go for coronavirus testing? Wouldn't it? The legislation aims to get more money into the pockets of Americans hard hit by widespread business closures. Eligible individuals would receive $1,200 checks for each person in their household, up to $6,000. The bill extends add-on unemployment benefits of $600, in addition to the state benefits, through January of 2021. Creates a special enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act exchanges for the uninsured, and provides $175 billion for families to pay their mortgages and rent. The legislation includes student loan forgiveness, an employee retention tax credit, and increases maximum SNAP benefits by 15%. But tucked into the legislation are provisions that rankled the Republicans, including expanding $1,200 checks to certain undocumented immigrants, restoring the full state and local tax deduction that helps individuals in high-tax blue states, a $25 billion rescue for the U.S. Postal Service, allowing legal marijuana businesses to access banking services, and early voting and vote-by-mail provisions. Representative Tom Cole, Republican from Oklahoma, said so much of what's in this bill simply has nothing at all to do with the current crisis. It's more like a liberal Christmas wish list. It would make more sense to just send it straight to Santa Claus than send it to the United States Senate. It would have a better chance of becoming law that way. Acknowledging this bill won't get passed in the GOP-led Senate, Democrats framed the HEROES Act as their opening offer for negotiations. Democrat leadership said bipartisan legislation wasn't an option because Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted to put the brakes on any new relief bill and suggested that states be given the option of declaring bankruptcy. Pelosi hit back on critics who say now is the time to take a pause on more spending, and that the bill is bloated with liberal goodies. She says, "This is not a Christmas tree. There's nothing joyful about this. This is a very strategically planned piece of legislation." Not a joyful thing. This is from the person who smiled and handed out celebratory pens when they decided to impeach the president, remember? Representative Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, chided members who said she paid lip service to the first responders and heroes, but don't back it up with money. Waters told her colleagues, put up or shut up, now's the time to do it. The atmosphere at the Capitol Friday reflected the health risks of the global pandemic. Many members and staff wore face masks. Lawmakers wiped down services after they made speeches on the House floor. Voting took more than an hour as members were brought into the chamber in alphabetical waves to practice social distancing. Despite Friday's fractured vote, lawmakers on both sides expressed optimism they could find some bipartisan agreement in the future. Cole said, "We've proven that we can work together. We did for four straight bills." He's referring to the nearly $3 trillion in aid Congress has already passed. He says, we know how to do this. Remember what I said earlier, and that is that on the right, people are saying this is dead on arrival at the Senate. This is insane. As we've just heard, it's a Christmas list. It's not realistic. And I really can't argue with any of that. But having listened to something that Newt Gingrich had to say over the weekend, it provided a bit more insight and understanding as to why this wish list, this progressive goody list, is being pushed forward by Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats and some Republicans. Why pass a COVID-19 recovery bill in the House that has no chance of passing the Senate? People have been asking that question. And it's partially because the lack of any bipartisan input led to a bill that read more like a Democratic wish list than something designed to keep Americans safe while getting them back to work. Consider the fact that there are more references to cannabis, to marijuana, in the bill. 68 references, according to the New York Post. More references to pot than there are to jobs. Only 52 references to jobs. It includes generous bailouts to state governments whose problems are their own making. It'll restore a federal deduction for property taxes aimed mostly at blue states. There was no language restricting spending on abortion. It's the most expensive spending bill ever passed in the history of the House of Representatives. It features a whole lot of pork. Yet only a $1,200 check to American taxpayers by the way of direct immediate monetary relief. Although this being a Democratic bill, that money would also go to certain illegal immigrants, too, as we've discussed. It's yet more debt added onto the pile in the year when we've already added an obscene amount of it to the federal budget. In a word, it is unacceptable. But don't think that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi doesn't know what she's doing. In an opinion piece for Fox News, which was published Saturday, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich said, "You shouldn't underestimate Pelosi, who may be signaling to the base in advance of the November elections. And this is what I want you to see." Now, Gingrich had some of the same thoughts about the outrageous nature of the bill. In his op-ed, which pointed out in the headline that Pelosi's crazy $3 trillion coronavirus spending bill may have a secret purpose, he even brought up this tweet he wrote in the wake of the legislation's proposal, which said, "How do you explain a House Democratic Party so crazy that their new $3 trillion proposal has 68 references to cannabis and only 52 references to jobs? Maybe Speaker Pelosi of San Francisco believes California Dreamin' could become the new national anthem. It's the most expensive spending bill ever passed in the history of the House of Representatives, but Pelosi took no public comment, no Republican input, and didn't consult with the Republican-controlled Senate or the White House on the bill," he wrote in his opinion piece on Saturday. Why? We'll get into that after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Monday, the 18th day of May, 2020. Back to Mr. Newt's observation about Nancy Pelosi's bill, the $3 trillion answer. He says, as we learned about the nuttier parts of the bill after it was introduced, it struck me as almost as a joke. But then Gingrich has a three-word warning for those engaging in that kind of thinking. He says, don't underestimate her. He writes, Pelosi is a survivor. She's tough. She is hardworking. And she's been through a lot of campaigns and seen and executed a lot of maneuvers. Therefore, you must assume there is a sound strategic reason for Pelosi to bring forward a bill that is this radical, expensive, and controversial. Gingrich cited several reasons why he believes Pelosi's bill might actually help her party in the long run. He writes, first, Pelosi probably believes this is going to be a base turnout election, and she knows from all the polls that Republicans are more excited about the election than Democrats. He pointed to the Democrats' recent losses in congressional special elections in California and Wisconsin this past Tuesday. In swing state Wisconsin, the GOP easily kept a district, with Tom Tiffany winning a 57% to 43% victory over Tricia Zunker. California should be more worrying for Pelosi, however. For the first time in 22 years in the state, a Republican managed to flip a seat back from Democratic control. Gingrich wrote, the GOP win was clearly a function of a much more energized Republican base. From Pelosi's perspective, mobilizing the cannabis users and liberal investors is a useful move, too. They are as much a part of the Democratic base as traditional small business owners are part of the Republican base. Arousing the hardcore pro-abortion activists helps Pelosi with turnout and donations. Disciplined repetition of the word diversity appeals to her ideological activists and, to a lesser extent, minority communities. Appealing to the illegal immigrant community is a useful thing for Pelosi, and Democrats are working to make it possible for illegal immigrants to vote in a number of states. And then there's the property tax deduction, which helps out the wealthiest in the blue states, the bluest of blue states. The money to states that have been mismanaged is clearly a sop to public sector unions, who would likely have to see changes to their benefits otherwise, given the massive pensions debt those states have racked up. Adding to this is the fact that Gingrich thinks no one on the right is going to remember any of this. He says Pelosi has likely calculated that, as usual, the Republican candidates will forget to focus. She also must be betting that in a few weeks the Republican and independent voters will have forgotten this monstrosity of a left-wing wish list. Gingrich thinks that if Republicans hold strong, this feint will fail. He says it's a major gamble on Pelosi's part. If the Republicans have enough discipline and endurance, she will pay a substantial price for it. The question is whether they do. It's often difficult for either party to seize outrages and hold on tight to the narrative, especially when distressing news whirls by with an unsettling quickness. Nevertheless, Newt Gingrich is right. If Republicans remember what Pelosi did by shepherding this bill through the lower chamber of Congress, they can hold it over the congressional Democrats' heads in the autumn. They're the one who passed this silly affront, after all. This did nothing but waste Congress's time, at a point where time is of the essence. If that doesn't say everything about her leadership, I don't know what will. There's a very good chance Republicans don't remember it, however, and therein lies the problem. If the GOP fails to hammer home areas where the Democrats are profoundly out of touch, that forgetfulness could allow the Democrats to reposition themselves within the mainstream of American thought, just like they did in 2018. Let voters know what the Democrats' priorities are. They'll take it from there. Jane and I were talking when we were eating last night about this particular situation. or somewhere with, maybe we were driving, but we talked about it. And I explained to her that what Pelosi is doing is attempting to give a huge gift to each little radical segment of the Democrat base, to the gender identity people, to the pot people, to the abortion, pro-abortion people, and I can keep ticking them off one after another after another. Huge amounts of money. And saying, please remember, we care about you. We're here for you. We've got your back. We're the ones fighting for you. And when the Republicans say, this is dead on arrival, and they just brush it off and then forget about it, then Pelosi and her minions will come back and say to those radical fringe groups, remember, we were the ones who were there for you. The Republicans hate you. They want you to die. They don't want you to have the freedom to control your own body. They don't want you to have the freedom to make your own decisions about smoking dope. They don't want you to have any kind of life because they hate you and they want to control you. This is the message that Nancy Pelosi is sending to the Democrat base, the loony Democrat base. And we need to be very wise about how this works. As Newt Gingrich said, we need to remember what Nancy Pelosi is doing. We need to remember that she wants to throw billions of dollars at programs which don't have anything to do with what's going on as far as coronavirus is concerned. ''68 references to pot, to marijuana, to cannabis, 52 references to jobs. It's out of balance. This is the kind of thing that we have to remember between now and November. That they're focusing on the fringe groups in the base. Well, the Democrat base is almost all fringe groups. But that's who they're focusing on. And they're making grand promises to. And they're telling them, and it's a lie, they're telling them, we're the ones who care about you. We're going to take care of you. You remember when Barack Obama was running for president the first time? Do you remember seeing the interviews with people on the news who said they were standing behind Barack Obama because he was going to take care of them? He was going to look out for them. I'm voting for Obama because when Obama's president, I don't have to worry about my mortgage payments anymore. I don't have to worry about my car payments. I don't have to worry about my phone payments. You remember those interviews? You remember those statements? Well, if you don't, go back and do some searching. The internet's forever. You'll find those video interviews. They're online. Those people had been convinced that the Democrats were in their corner. The Democrats were going to take care of them. The Democrats were going to make sure they didn't have to worry about their mortgage payments anymore. Now, was that said by Barack Obama at any campaign stop? No. But his surrogates, the people who were going out in the field and talking to these groups of people and whipping up the support for him, those people were saying it. People like Al Sharpton, the Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, those people working as community organizers, whipping up the emotional frenzy in the field and on the streets, those people were saying things like that. And so what is going to be happening now as a result of Nancy Pelosi passing this $3 trillion bill in the House is that those same people, those same advocacy groups who are campaigning in those little segments of our society will be going to them and saying, look, this $3 trillion bill has stuff in it for you, billions of dollars for you and people like you. And the Republicans hate you so much they won't let it pass. We can't forget that this is what's going on. We have to remember between now and November that what Nancy Pelosi has done with this $3 trillion package is she has hung the carrot in front of the donkey. And she is counting on them pursuing the carrot. She's counting on them getting excited about it, emotionally worked up about it, and angry with anyone who would take it away from them. That's what's going on. And we have to, you and I, we have to remember our Republican representatives and senators. This is what she's done. So please think clearly and act decisively. Be very straightforward and clear in everything you have to say about this, because people need to know the truth. That it will not be approved, not because we don't care about people, but because it's unconstitutional. All of the provisions that she's promising people, well, for the most part, are against existing law. It's not the way our country operates. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here for the next edition. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.